When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to episode 369 of The Virtual Couch. I'm your host, Tony Overbay, a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I am here today. I have a co-host in studio. My co-host is Alexa Lovell. Alex, how are you doing?
I was going to say drum roll, please. Drum roll,
please. Hey, you do the editing, so can you insert a drum roll?
I don't know how.
Okay.
I could maybe figure it out.
I know. Let's get on that, right? Okay. And then Alexa Lovell, formerly known as Alexa Overbay,
mm-hmm.
a.k.a. my daughter.
4 years ago.
4 years ago, changed. Yeah.
Sounded like you were saying,
and that is when I ceased being your daughter.
That's when I was adopted by someone else.
That's right. When you were emancipated, I think that's the word.
Maybe.
Yeah. It's funny. I think it wasn't long ago that I referred to you still as Alexa Overbay, and I had to remember that you have that different last name. And I love your husband. He's a good guy.
He's a good guy.
Shout out Mitch.
Shout out.
Yeah, and then we have a couple other guests in studio that they prefer not to be on mic today. One is
the lovely Wendy Overbay.
Lovely Wendy Overbay.
And my dog.
And your dog, Charlie, an amazing golden retriever. But we've been talking about doing this episode for a little while. And when we were looking up when we did the first episode with you, Wendy, mm-hmm. myself, and Mitch, we didn't even realize it was almost a year ago to the date.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah. So I think it was released on March 30th of 2022. We're recording this on March 26th. It'll probably go out on the 28th, 29th of 2022. And it's hard to believe it's 2023. Thank you. Still writing 2022 on my checks. That's a joke. I don't use checks because I don't. Have you ever written a check?
Yeah.
Have you really?
That's how we had to pay my rent when I lived in Idaho. They only took checks.
That wasn't that long ago.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know why, but...
Yeah. Do you remember, we were talking earlier, do you remember a landline?
Yes. Okay. Well, yeah. I remember we had a wireless home phone, but I don't remember.
You don't remember a cord?
No.
Okay.
That was before my time.
Do you remember cassettes?
For a movie?
For audio?
No.
Love this. Okay, I can do this all day.
I thought you meant like the
VHS cassettes?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember those?
For movies, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I remember.
Okay. All right. That is not why we're here today.
No.
Okay. And as a matter of fact, to set the stage, we were looking at the show notes from the episode a year ago, and I thought that was a good place to start. So let me just read what the show notes were. So a year ago, we did an episode called Alexa's Road to Recovery. Daughter Alexa shares the struggles, ... I guess that is. I don't know why the whole, it's not here. It was a very powerful title.
Doesn't sound like it.
No.
...
Oh. So, okay, struggles of recovering from a devastating accident.
...
I know, it says devastating ... I guess if I make the screen larger, let me do that. Since you're editing this may... Oh, that was it.
Oh, nice.
Okay, so it was called Alexa's Road to Recovery. My daughter Alexa shares the struggles of recovering from a devastating accident. And here's what we wrote. And we were just talking, you and Wendy and myself, and it's pretty crazy to even think of where things are. Even from when we wrote these show notes. So I said, on Saturday, February 5th, my daughter Alexa drove to the gym after completing a week in the externship of her dreams. She was just a few months shy of graduation to become an ultrasound technician. She had committed to a physical health routine months ago and was in the best shape of her life. She was living apart from her husband, Mitch, for the first time as he completed his final semester of college. Upon graduation, Mitch was planning on taking the MCAT in May. They had worked hard and they sacrificed a lot to get to this point in their early lives in hopes that they would both be in a position to help others for the remainder of their lives. First of all, before I keep reading this, I don't think I had my Grammarly subscription yet because this sounds like pretty bad grammar.
Yeah.
It does. So
it's okay.
It'll sound better on this one. Okay, and then it continues. And then in an instant, their lives would be altered forever. A large truck ran a red light and T-boned Alex in her Mini Cooper, throwing the car over 100 feet into a nearby field. Her injuries have been nothing short of devastating. Alex, Mitch, my wife Wendy, and I discussed the impact of this devastating change on their lives and the effect that tragedy can have on the extended family and how one event can significantly alter the future that someone had worked so hard to make a reality. So here's why the show notes are so interesting to start with, is we could even break down those. Mitch was getting ready to mm-hmm. take the MCAT.
Yep.
And if we start there alone,
yeah.
What did we do yesterday?
Well, Mitch flew us in an airplane to Sedona for lunch.
Because Mitch did not end up taking the MCAT. Nope. Instead,
he is in flight school or yeah. pilot school, whatever you call
yeah.
aviation.
And maybe we should have brought him in and asked him, but do you feel or do you know, is some of that just, hey, life's short, let's figure out what we want to do?
Well, it ties into my accident. That's what we're talking about. But
yeah.
he just didn't have a super, super strong passion for that.
Yeah.
But he was talking to some of my surgeons and like a lot of the people on my, you know, hospital and recovery team. He got pretty close with my surgeon and they would talk a lot. And he was just saying, if this isn't something that you're dying to do, it's not gonna, you know yeah. what I mean? It's not going to be as beneficial as you may think. And Mitch just wasn't dying to do it. And so he started to explore other options and he loves adrenaline and adventure and all those cool things. And so his friend actually owns a flight school. Shout out Simplify.
Yes, right. We will tag them.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so he looked into that, went on the Discovery flight and just fell in love with it. And he has just been killing it. Like he loves it. He has yeah. so much fun. It seems like he's kind of found a passion with that, which makes me super happy. And obviously it's a hard line between, I kind of don't think this would have happened if I wouldn't right. have gone in the accident.
Right.
And it's like, obviously I wouldn't want to go through the accident right. again, but I'm so glad it brought him that line of work or passion that he has found.
Yeah.
So yes, yesterday we just took a family flight to Sedona and
had awesome. Lunch. And it was the coolest thing ever in a little plane. I was uh-huh. all Dramamined up. So I wasn't
yeah, airsick. You fell asleep on the way back.
I did.
In the co-pilot seat.
Yeah. But that's also because that was one of the greatest burgers I think I've ever had in my mm-hmm. entire life.
Yeah. That place is good.
It was good. But it was wild to think mm-hmm. that we come out here and then the four of us jump in an airplane that Mitch mm-hmm. flies to Sedona so we can have lunch. And I didn't realize how much that having that conversation with your surgeon had helped Mitch.
It was a big impact, I think.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. Yeah. So we go from there to you were, 2 weeks in the externship of your dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like I want to, people are probably wondering how did that go? I'm sure you got back to it after you recovered. You're probably done with that externship now, working in a hospital, right?
Yeah. Nope. I wish.
I mean, talk about that
journey. Yeah, that whole experience was so weird because, yeah, I had just, so I'm in ultrasound school in Phoenix and you go through about like 18 months of schooling and then a 6 month externship, which is basically like rotations mm-hmm. as if you were in like nursing school or something. So I was assigned a hospital and I would do my 6 month training there. And I had finally gotten one. It had taken a long time because of COVID. So I was finally assigned and I got out to that and was doing it for a week and I loved it. I loved my preceptor and the location was perfect. And then the accident happened. And just that in itself, like trying to figure it out with my school while I was not really all there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, mom was calling them and Mitch was trying to figure it out. And so that got put on hold for a long time. That was in February. And then I didn't start going back to school to even just practice scanning until September.
Yeah.
Maybe October. I don't even remember. And then they told me that I would need to repeat a class before going back out to externship to make sure I was familiar with
everything. Wait, what do you remember about that? I remember, man, I just want to jump in and I want Wendy to talk so much too about, but I want your experience of, I know as a dad, I just, every time I think I would say to you, let me get on there and do some podcast and make a call out to all hospitals yeah. in the Phoenix area and get Alex yeah. on there. And
it was frustrating because I had just felt like everything had fallen into place and I had worked so hard to get to this spot, and for it all to be taken away because of something that wasn't my fault felt very unfair. And then to finally be, you know, wanting to make a plan again, and then for that to kind of be shut down again and be like, well, we don't have a hospital, you need to retake a class. And meanwhile, all my friends are graduated, getting jobs, starting the life that I thought I would have. It was so hard to watch that happen. So it just felt, I just remember I felt like I would call you guys like every other day and just be like, another thing, like another disappointment. I just felt like I could not catch a break.
No.
And nothing was going to plan because of the accident. And it was so frustrating.
Yeah.
And anyways, so.
And it was hard because, I mean, I know I would get frustrated, and even things like your school. And but I mean, to be fair, they didn't have precedent of this happening.
Right. Like, of course, you know, they hadn't dealt with this before and they were doing all that they could. And
there just weren't a lot of locations either.
No, there's not. Especially with, like I said, COVID, it's just hard to get everyone placed. So, yeah, so I started my class that I had to repeat in January. And my last day was just this last Friday. So I finished that class, and then I will go out to my hospital mid-April. And that will be 6 months, and then I will finally be graduated. Which is so crazy, like a year and a half.
It really is. How have you been?
Can I say something you can edit this out?
Oh, we're not editing this out.
I don't know if you guys remember this, but in the hospital, your surgeon told us that your recovery would be about 6 to 8 weeks. And I think we completely misunderstood what he meant by recovery and what we
thought
he meant by recovery. Because I think we told your school
it would only be
back in 2 to 3 months.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, I can't believe that your body could go through something like this and that you're going to be walking again in 6 to 8 weeks. And I think what your doctor meant by recovery is you might be able to get out of bed
in 6 to 8 weeks.
And we thought,
like,
by
I'll be
six
good.
To 8 weeks, he meant you would be walking and that you would probably be able to go back to school.
Yeah.
And so
he was not saying that at all.
He was saying, I really think he meant like you might be able to get up and put weight on your left side or whatever.
Yeah. Because in reality, 6 to 8 weeks, I was still in my wheelchair.
Oh, for sure.
Or like maybe using my walker a little bit. Like there's no way I would have been back at school.
And I think that made it that much more difficult. Like I wish we would have been more mentally prepared for that. Because I think everything seemed like it took so much longer because in our minds, you were going to be up and walking and back to school and all these things in a few months. And instead it took
a year to get back.
Yeah.
And I think, I think like you said, it almost added to my disappointment and my just the reality of it all, because I had such different expectations because it was always 6 to 8 weeks. Right. Like that's what we were told.
And I think we assumed
that,
that you were like going to be walking and going to be, you know, where the reality of, I think what he meant was you might be able to get up and put weight on your leg in 6 to 8 weeks,
which that
was
true.
About accurate.
But
I remember how much weight could you put on though? I remember you could only,
I couldn't, like, I mean, well, the first month or so they said, do not use your left leg.
Yeah.
So I was completely shattered, like in my pelvis, couldn't use my left leg. Turns out I had a broken elbow this whole time.
Yeah, talk about that. And I realize now, I'm assuming that everybody, but I've had a lot of growth in listeners over the last year.
Explain.
Yeah. So talk about what happened. Do you mind?
Yeah, I don't want to sound like I'm repeating it all, so I apologize. But I did our first podcast and then I did a friend's podcast.
Oh, yeah.
She's a Lady podcast.
We'll put the links to that too, because I think that episode
was
really
awesome.
Good.
But I feel like I'm probably saying a lot of things.
Oh, go for it.
Repeating it. But anyways, so I was T-boned in the intersection right outside of my house in Arizona, and
The driver was going about 60 miles an hour.
And I was pulling into the intersection, so probably going 10. I don't even know.
And he ran a red light.
Yes, I had the green arrow. And this is all from witnesses because I completely blacked out and was not responsive on the scene. And I was taken to the hospital and assessed for my injuries. And I just remember, I think my first memory is that day of just being moved on the stretcher. And essentially my body was being pulled into two because my top half was dislocated from my bottom half. So that I just remember screaming in pain and asking them to stop. And then the next memory after that is just my mom and my husband, Mitch, coming to the hospital the following day. But it turns out once I had been told what happened, it was just like a long list of injuries. I had concussion. They said it was like brain bleeds, right? Concussion, brain bleeds. My neck, I couldn't even move it. Like it was so probably whiplash, I would assume, because there weren't actually that many. I didn't have anything broken up there, thankfully. And then I had a punctured lung and two broken ribs. Both of my hips were broken. My sacrum was shattered. All, like every bone in my pelvis basically had somewhere it was broken. And then all my organs, my kidneys were bruised and bleeding out. My liver was lacerated. My spleen had ruptured and was bleeding out. My entire like strip down the back of my right leg was just completely numb. And then my elbow was broken, but I didn't find that out until June or July. And it was still broken then because I had just been using it this whole time and not allowing it to have that, you know, the no weight on it. And the whole reason I bring that up is because I was in a wheelchair and a walker for the first couple months. And so in order to use my walker and only be able to use one leg, I had to use so much upper body strength. And now it's funny looking back because I was using upper body strength, but I had a broken arm and I was using
broken elbow. Yeah.
And so it's just weird to think back. And I was always like complaining that it hurt so bad. And it's just, it is interesting now to look back and think, oh yeah, cause it was broken and I was using it. And since
your lower half was so in pain, honestly, did it just not feel
no,
like
it just,
the elbow
it didn't feel like a big
pain.
Deal. Yeah. Like I just had so much pain everywhere that was such a minor thing that I was like, whatever, wow. Like I'll get through that. And so, yeah. So I was in the ICU trauma for a week and then they moved me to a different hospital to do rehab. And as I mean, it was a hospital stay, but I was also going to PT every day and that was another week long. And then I came home and was essentially just living in bed for 3 or 4 months until I was able to get around a little bit better.
Yeah.
And even that, I was barely getting around or leaving the house. And
you know, it's interesting too. I was looking through some notes because I was going to read even your mom, Wendy had posted one time about what the doctor had said about that basically your upper half had been separated from your lower half and your entire pelvic ring had been shattered. And so I couldn't remember how to spell sacrum. So I was typing that into my notes, but then I found, and this is crazy. I forgot I wrote all these things. We were joking about journals today. You've got your journal, but I wrote a lot of things about just the things I don't remember about. We'll get to this one maybe later, but when Wendy and Mitch looked at the dash cam footage, you know, we've never talked about that. And, and there's a part where talking about, at rehab, talking to the PT about the bump on the left side of your backside, right? Is your pelvis rotated? You know, you may have to address that down the road. And then I even found a note that I forgot about when we were sending a message out to the people following on social media or GoFundMe. And it was just talking about how you, okay, here it is. It says, Alex learned today that she needs surgery ASAP. I forgot this one. To address the numbness potentially being caused by one of the bolts in her pelvis, because you had 3 10-inch bolts in your pelvis. And I just said, it goes without saying that we were hoping that there would be no further surgeries needed, but we're optimistic this will address some of the pain she's dealing with on a daily basis. And even in that scenario, what would you remember then?
Yeah, that was, I remember that was probably mentally one of the lowest points ever was around that time. I remember.
Do you remember a time frame?
Like what month that
was? Approximately
July and I think it was the last day of June, I think, or close to that.
But you'd been told at that point too. What I thought was interesting was I think we were all thinking, well, you've got all these things that you'll need to deal with later, but I remember when you were almost said they were saying, okay, you're kind of done with surgeries and you'll just check in every few months or a year or whatever. And I remember thinking, that's crazy.
I know. It did seem weird just because of how much went wrong. It was surprising to me that it was just that original surgery. And then they kind of just assumed maybe there would be more, but we're just going to go with it now. So I had gone to my surgeon. I think I went every 6 weeks or so to check in with him and get x-rays done. And I had just kept addressing the numbness down my leg because not only was it numb, but it was so painful. Like I would get shooting pains down my leg and nerve pain, and it felt like my leg was on fire or, you know, just the weirdest sensations. And my surgeon was so, I think, just curious mostly, like, what in the world would this be from? Was it from the accident? Was it from the surgery? What, you know what I mean? Did we hit a nerve or whatever? And so he ordered a CT scan, and that is when he went through it with me in the room, and he just kind of like got really silent and was like, oh my gosh, this bolt is passing through a foramen in your sacrum that it shouldn't be, and essentially blocking your path of nerves right there. So I would assume that's where your numbness is coming from. And he just said, I really think we need to take this bolt out ASAP. And I think he was moving the following
I remember
week.
You were saying, and wasn't he retiring or something?
He was moving to a different practice, like in Texas. So I wouldn't, he wouldn't be dealing with me anymore. So he was like, yeah, I think I could get you in on Thursday. And it's like Tuesday. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I just remember him telling me that. And then basically he was like, someone will call you today and we'll schedule it. And it will most likely be in a couple days. And I just remember bawling. Like, I just could not handle another disappointment, like another challenge. And I remember, because at that point it had been four or five months. Mm-hmm. And I had finally kind of felt like I was on like the upward.
Yeah.
Like I'm getting around a little bit more. I was still using a cane, but I felt like I had kind of figured out, like, okay, I can take this medication if this is hurting, and I can do this if this is hurting, and I'm communicating with my school, and, you know, things were starting to look good.
I had literally just gone home. Like,
Because
my mom was here for 5 months.
And I literally like went home.
I think it was like the week before.
Found that out like the next week that you were going to have
another surgery.
I went home for good with no plans to come back every week.
I know, because Jake and I had to start cleaning the house every day.
Finally make it acceptable.
So I feel like we were at this turning point. Okay, I'm going to go home. You're well enough to like take care of your basic needs on your own. And then literally the next week, it's like, well, you need another surgery.
Right. And it was so quick. And so it was just all unknown that I kind of assumed like, oh, this is going to be another invasive procedure. And like, I might be going through this whole recovery again. Like I just assumed kind of the worst, right? Because I was like, they're still going into my pelvis to remove a bolt from my bone. There's going to be this gaping hole. It won't be as supported as before. They could mess something up. Like
if through your nerves or whatever. Then
That's so scary. I was so scared.
Do you remember too? One, I can't remember which doctor told you this, but one doctor, we asked one time about, well, like when will the bolts be removed?
Right.
And they were like, oh, never. And they said, trust me, you don't want them removed because it will be so painful.
Right.
Do you remember that?
So then for them to be like, oh, we're going to take it out.
The way your bone grows around these, like you do not want to have them removed.
Yeah.
And so then when you called and said, I have to have one of them removed.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like, no, because just because what we had been told about.
Right.
If that ever happened.
Right. So, yes, I just remember I just was devastated and I just felt like everything went to start all over from the beginning. And once again, I was just kind of like, this is just so unfair. Like, what in the world? And I was so upset and scared. I was so scared. And so then I had that procedure done super quick. And it was so weird being more like alert and awake for this one. Not awake for the surgery, obviously, but like.
Oh, but not just coming in and out of consciousness in a sense.
Yes. To actually, I remember the prep for the surgery and, you know, getting the IVs and everything. And first time around, I could not tell you a single thing that happened. And so it was just interesting. And thankfully that the surgery went well. I still have the bolt. They let me keep it, which is fun. And well,
I remember we should put a picture on that on social media because it's in a bag. There's a tiny bit of blood in it
still.
But it's like a literal 10-inch bolt with threads.
It's kind of heavy. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And that, and I just remember the recovery, it was hard and it was painful. It definitely added more pain to everything at the beginning. But thankfully it did correct a huge, huge issue of pain I was dealing with kind of on the left side of my sacrum, which wasn't the reason they took it out. They took it out to fix the numbness. And, you know, funny enough, like the numbness is still present.
Oh.
But it removed a pain that we had no idea it would remove.
Okay.
And so it really was like, I would much rather have that removed than the numbness.
Oh, I see.
Because of how much worse the pain was than the numbness.
Yeah.
So that was a huge blessing to have that figured out. But the numbness is still there till this day. And it's just something I'm kind of used to now. Like I just have said, if that's the only thing,
yeah.
I guess that's the wrong thing to say because there's still so many things I feel.
I think in the context of acceptance, that if you're accepting the fact that, oh, there will be numbness.
Right. Then it's like, okay.
Constantly
then I'm
like, why and when and how can I manage? And
yeah.
So you're allowed to be more
in
the moment with other things.
Right. So that was, but yes, I do remember, I just remember mentally just how much that affected me because it really was like, oh my gosh, I have to start over. And I really thought I was, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was weird.
So when I was reading through the notes, the bump in your backside, is that just the thought will just be there forever?
Yeah. So that's just, it's nothing super noticeable. But if you were to really just like stare at my sacrum, it's.
I still don't know what the sacrum is.
Yeah.
So I won't be staring at it anytime soon.
Well, that would kind of be weird.
Yeah, but for people who don't know, at the base of your spine, it's almost like a triangular shaped bone that your iliacs like attached to, your hip bone.
Yeah, so we all know tell us more, Dr. Overbay, the iliacs.
You know the
was
round,
that Homer wrote the Iliac and the Odyssey?
Isn't that what they're called?
That's
Alex?
Funny.
Yeah.
No. Okay. I was like, wait, maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, no, I just don't even know. Okay.
Yeah, so they connect to the sacrum, and that's where, for Alex, and then your sacrum is kind of like the end of your back bone structure.
So, like, my hips were off of my sacrum.
Completely broken off of her sacrum.
Which is why I was basically top and half dislocated,
half,
because my hips were
nothing
not attached to my spine and my sacrum.
Back.
Okay, I'm so sorry. My ADD is going insane because when you say the leg bone, well, the leg bone's attached to the,
connected to
the thigh bone. And then when you were talking about your hips, if there's one thing that Shakir has taught us, the hips don't lie.
Mm-hmm. They don't.
Okay.
But anyways.
Okay.
What were we saying?
But the sacrum bump, the bump.
So, yeah, in order for them to put me back together in the best way they could with everything shattered, my hips are now misaligned a little bit. And so if you were to look at them or feel them, you can see that they're not the same shape on both sides. And that in itself was actually really annoying for me because it was just another reminder of what happened, which I know it could be worse, but it is a bummer. And so because they were misaligned, everything was rotated a little bit. And then part of my sacrum, just the way that it healed because it was shattered, it kind of protrudes a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that itself is painful. And that also is something that, like my physical therapist was saying, it could cause problems in the future because that's kind of the first spot that's touching your bed or touching a chair or things like that. So that bump. Yeah. And it was scary because we were kind of like, what the heck is this?
That broke my heart whenever you heard about that.
Yeah. And so that's still there and it still irritates me, but that's just another thing where it's like, okay, this is what it is.
And on that note too, maybe we can do a quick check in on, I think one of the things I heard the most from our first podcast was the, well, at least comment.
Yes.
Because it's so funny that I can say that I don't want to be this person.
Mm-hmm.
But as you're saying that, it's so hard to not have me to get rid of my own discomfort to say, man, but at least you're able to walk. But at least you're. And I was grateful that a lot of people had reached out or people, some of the clients that I work with or other people would say, how's Alex? And you would start to tell them and then they would say, but I'm not going to say, well, at least she's alive. And at least, because it's like, well, those are a given.
Right.
Yeah. What's that
it's
been
so
like?
It's so hard. Okay. I still struggle with that because I find myself doing that to myself and others still. If something goes wrong, I find myself doing it to Mitch all the time. Like if he has a problem, be like, well, at least this is happening.
And we do it as a human being.
Of course. Yeah. And I don't think it's like horrible.
No.
But I do think there's a time and a place and a way to approach it where it's just better to just really listen to what they're saying, have the empathy, ask them questions, be curious about it, and just kind of let them sit with that and sit with them and just be like, that does suck. Like, yeah, that is really horrible. And I can't imagine going through that. And I almost feel like if you start with that, then if someone is going to throw in that, at least it's like, at least start with the empathy, right? Like, at least get of it.
Well,
it totally invalidates what you're going through, because, you know, I would see people all the time and the first thing they would say is, at least you're here and at least this happened. And it's like, oh, totally. Yeah, like, of course I'm glad to be here.
Check in with me first.
Right. Because then it just feels like,
how are you?
Exactly. I felt like everything that I went through didn't matter because at least I'm alive.
Yeah. And you've been editing the podcast for a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm having a little aha here. Not that, again, like you're saying, Mitch is a pilot now, mm-hmm, and talking with the surgeons. And I don't feel like I've ever been on more of a journey of trying to understand a lot of things since your accident.
Yeah.
And that what we do with our discomfort, I mm-hmm realize, has come a lot from even having to sit with my own discomfort.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the at least you're alive is a way to get rid of somebody's discomfort.
Totally.
But without, because we're so afraid to sit with it. So I like what you're saying, because I think if I'm going to say, hey, how are you? Well, give me the latest. What's the update? I almost feel like as the person asking, we need to acknowledge, okay, and I'm going to be uncomfortable because,
right,
because I'm not.
If I really want to know, and if I really want to know, asking,
and if I'm a really good friend or whatever, yeah, because I'm going to have to recognize that this is going to be uncomfortable because I'm going to want to alleviate that discomfort. Mm-hmm. And then I think a lot of the stories we might tell ourselves is, man, I probably should have checked in sooner.
Right.
Or I probably could have done something more. And so that's where we want to say, yeah, I mean, I wish I could have got a hold of you more, but I was just busy. Or, well, at least I just knew you were alive. And it's okay to be uncomfortable.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It is such a weird line, because I am so grateful for the people that would check in and try to turn things more positively and spin things positively, because of course I needed that. I was mm-hmm in such a dark place. But also when that's constantly being said to you of at least this and at least this, it's like, okay, then I guess I don't really want to keep talking, because everything just feels invalidated. But it's hard, because I know that people mean well, and I don't want to sound like I'm bashing that, of course.
None of this is to go, look, you guys.
Right.
It's like,
but no, it's like, if I learned anything from this, it is definitely how I approach people going through anything. Just let's really listen. And like you said, be willing to sit with the discomfort of the answer and the situation, because it's so important not to make that person feel invalidated. You don't know what, and it feels so cliche saying this because it's something people say all the time, but you just do not know what people are going through.
Yeah.
And I think that is another huge lesson that I've learned. Even if you think you know, or you've gone through something similar, like, you don't know. And I feel like that's something we just need to accept. And I think it's hard, because if you were to look at me, and this is amazing that I don't have any obvious limitations, or, you know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't know that that happened to me if you were just to look. And I'm so grateful for that. But it also is hard when people then just immediately assume, like, oh, she's fine.
Yeah.
She is over it. You know what I mean? And yes, I've moved on from certain things, but oh my gosh, I'm still like in the thick of it, you know, mentally and physically. There's so many things that still bother me and hurt. And I'll just have comments all the time of like, oh, well, you're looking great and you must be doing this and feeling this. And
well, can I tell you, like, when we got here, you have this amazing dog, Charlie. You're in the backyard and we were throwing sticks or playing catch. Mm-hmm. And you said, watch, guys. And you kind of lightly walked quickly-ish / slow jog a few feet.
And that was
And I was huge. About to cry. Honestly, I told Mom later that night, I was like, that I wanted to cry.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just the little things that no one would really pick up on or notice. And I've thought multiple times, if there was some scary situation in a store or something and people like, were like, run, I'd be like, you know what? I'll just be back here trying to speed walk and catch up. Like, I'd be in trouble. Yeah. And you wouldn't know that just looking at me. So it's just little things like that where it opened my eyes for sure. Maybe I was just very naive to that, but just, oh my gosh, you really, really don't know what people are going through. Especially, I think people are so good at just hiding, you know, oh, how are you doing? Good. Like, that's just we're just so quick to respond with that. And it's like, oh, I'm not good.
Well, it's okay. And then Mitch and I were talking at lunch today when we were waiting for a table. And he was just saying, do you ever just look at other people and you just kind of, you know, you wonder what's going on in their lives or you assume you know what's going on. And then he and I break into the whole, and I've been talking about this on the podcast, observation and judgment. Mm-hmm. And then we both just for fun, we kind of looked around and said, okay, yeah. Like, how easy is it to just say, well, that guy looks like this or that couple looks this way. So I wonder if they're happy or not, or, you know, that kid's only on his device and his parents aren't talking to each other. And so we just make all these observations anyway.
Yeah.
And throw those judgments in there. So I really like what you're saying about, and plus we have no idea what the physical things they're going through.
Right.
And in my job, the emotional and mental things, and you got them all going on.
Right. And it's just, and I mean, I'm sure so many other people do, and we just don't know it. I think it's just important to, first of all, never to judge because...
And not assume.
Right, because I think, yeah, like you said, we're so quick to fill in that gap. We're so curious or we want to make a reason for something, so we just make these observations and judgments. And when in reality, like, we're probably wrong most of the time. Right. And so anyways, I think that was just, that's been a really big lesson to me of just, I just try not to let anyone, whatever they're saying or doing, I try not to take it personally. And I know that they're going through something and try not to assume when I see someone going through something, because it's just.
Well, it goes back to that. We're back to discomfort again, because I feel like we make the observation and judgment to kind of ease our discomfort or anxiety or even. I mean, talk about be curious, more curious. So if somebody says that they did or said something, and then we say, well, why? Or are you sure?
Yeah.
Or I don't think you should do that. I mean, we're still just doing all these things to manage our own expectations and our own emotions.
Right.
And that doesn't allow other people to have the space to have their own experiences.
Right. Totally. Oh, we just have no idea what people are really, really going through. And I think we just need to give everyone more grace
and have
more
curiosity and back off the assumptions to alleviate our own discomfort.
Right.
Okay. Speaking of alleviate discomfort.
Yes.
Can we talk a little bit about pain medications?
Yes.
Because I there are people that I have worked with. There are people I know that get addicted to pain medications and you were on the heavy stuff.
Yes, I understand.
And I want to know
why it can be addicting.
Do you? I want to hear. And first of all, were you worried about becoming addicted?
Yes, I was. I was on, I mean, from the get-go, they had me on oxycodone, tramadol, muscle relaxers. I think those were the main ones. But I was on high dosage. Yeah. But I was told all the time to be careful because of, obviously, what can happen. And I remember at one point, when my mom was staying with me, we had to go pick up my medication and I would stay home in bed. My mom was my, I wanted to make up a cool name for someone who goes and gets your drugs.
Your drug mule?
My drug mule.
Ooh, that sounds awful.
But she would go get the good drug mules.
Yeah.
She would go pick up my medication and there was just a funny experience that we had.
Funny. I was gonna say I was in California, and when you guys told me this one, this is talk about again. Look at me. Let me ease my discomfort by letting you guys know. I wanted to go fight some pharmacist, says the guy who's actually never been in a fight in his whole life.
That we said,
right? Yeah, but what was it? Okay, lay out what was that
experience,
you guys.
I'm not even sure if I remember everything leading up to it. And Alex, you can help me. Like, from what I remember. We just had a lot of hurdles with your medication, whether it was between your insurance or and working with the pharmacy and like everything involved. But I feel like we
several times we would go to pick up the prescription. You would get the notification yes. that like your doctor's like, hey, it's at the pharmacy. It's, you know, you can go get it. And we would go to get it and they would be like, oh, you can't pick that up yet.
And usually this was when I had like one or two pills left of my old one. And it'd be like, oh, we need this. And it was right. so stressful.
And it wasn't because you were lapsing, but they won't refill those things until right.
Right. Before. Because they yeah. don't want you to take right. too much.
Yeah. And you were taking exactly yeah. what your doctor yeah. prescribed.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Like Like we were sticking to the exact dosage that your doctor yes. prescribed. And so I just remember on one occasion going in to pick it up and the pharmacy telling me, well, you can't, it's too soon to pick up this prescription. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, her doctor is the one who just notified us that right, it's ready to be it. Picked up. And she only has like two pills left. And he just kind of started. Well,
Do you want to hear the note?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We had an experience with a pharmacist. Wendy was interacting with them where they, and I put that in all caps, I must have been yelling, had mixed up when a muscle relaxant and her oxy could be refilled. And the result was hours on the phone, multiple times being denied on the day she needed it filled. And Wendy spending 30 minutes with a pharmacist telling her that when the medical board hears how much Alex is taking, that her doctor had prescribed her, I'll add, that the feds will be there to arrest her or something to that effect.
He literally said the DEA will be on your doorstep. If I fill this prescription, the DEA will be on your doorstep arresting your daughter. And I was like, we are literally trying to fill a prescription that her doctor prescribed. And
it's like he just seemed shocked that I was taking it. And it's like, Kate, have you had this? Like, well, do you know how this feels?
He said, this prescription is so high. Like, she's taking such a heavy dosage.
This, yeah.
And he said, trust me, you do not want your daughter addicted to this. And I kind of snapped back now. And said, I was so upset. I think I was just like in yeah. tears. And I was like, it makes me so emotional. I was like, you have no idea what my daughter's going through right yeah. now and the pain that she's in. And he's like, well, would you rather have her addicted? And I was so upset because I understand what he was saying, yeah. but he had no idea what had happened to you.
Right. Alex. All he saw was what I was prescribed.
All he saw was
right?
that your yeah. doctor prescribed you this,
yeah.
these painkillers. And
meanwhile, I'm at home in bed, can't move,
right.
bawling 24/7.
And here he is. I just felt so shamed.
Yes.
Like I felt like I was a user.
Yeah.
yeah.
Like trying to manipulate the system.
Yes. And we were doing everything we should have been doing.
Yes. And we were following the protocol like exactly as it was prescribed.
Yeah.
And just to have somebody tell you that you're putting your daughter's life in danger, you're basically made me feel like we were doing something illegal.
Yeah.
You know, and it was that's a hard world to be in. And then you have to go, I don't know, most people probably know this. I didn't know this, but you have to go to a pain doctor, like through a pain clinic, like your regular, once you're prescribed those
Then you types get set of prescriptions, up with the pain management
it's not like your GP or yeah. whatever.
General
it's not,
practitioner,
yeah, it's not like they don't continue to manage that for you. Mm-hmm. You get assigned a pain doctor mm-hmm. or through a pain clinic. So then we're going to this pain clinic, which Alex's pain doctor was amazing.
Yeah,
like he was so nice and so great to work with. But the clinic itself, it's just a different
world.
And it's just such a crazy thing to be thrown into when you're already dealing with, you know, all we cared about was getting Alex better.
Right.
But then you're kind of thrown into this other world that you're dealing with too, of trying to manage her. You know,
yeah.
manage the medication and
right.
the pain and
right.
just all that. It was just
It's like that. And that's what our days consisted of was my medicine schedule mm-hmm. for months. We had, mm-hmm. we both had alarms set so that we wouldn't miss it. Because if we would go past it, I would really start to hurt.
Okay, if I read these,
I still have the alarms
yeah, read them.
Set on my
phone.
So
midnight oxy muscle relaxer every day, 6 a.m. oxy muscle relaxer. I mean, you got 12.
I have them like still
yeah.
set.
It's like
my
every
phone.
4 to 6 hours.
Yeah.
And, but what I was going to say about the addiction and
yeah.
even the alarms, I will still hear, like if I hear that alarm ringtone for whatever, another alarm, it like seriously kind of takes me back. And I like miss that because of the euphoria I would get from the drugs.
Oh, interesting. Thank
like
you
it
for
almost
that.
Pulls
yeah.
me back to usually like at night when I would get them, because I would just be laying in bed. I would take them and I would feel like not like so good. I was still, it's not like it completely took it away, but to just get a little bit of relief from the insane pain I was feeling and the euphoria that the oxy would cause, I was like, oh, I totally get why this is
a
problem. I do. Yeah. And it's, and it was never an issue because I was so terrified of being on them for so long that I was always working to get off of them and lower my dosage. But oh yeah, I get it. Like it really, I mean, it would help, and it would, and it's just funny because I, yeah, when I hear a certain alarm, I'm like, oh, that, I kind of like that. But you know.
So then did you experience withdrawals?
I did, but not horrible. It was just when I was going down dosages, I would have like maybe a day or two of night sweats or headaches, or it was nothing horrible. And then like finally going off of them, I had worked my way down to such a low dose that when I finally stopped, it was kind of the same thing. Like I would get a night of, you know, night sweats and a fever, and then I was fine, thankfully.
Wendy just left out of frame, but I have one more, and we don't have to talk about this much at all if you don't want, but there's one part that I just jotted down, just bringing awareness to you and Mitch had watched all the dash cam footage and sharing your impressions. And that was something, and I'm not saying that this is anything's better or worse, but I couldn't. And so I wanted to, you know, and you had talked about it, and I think we both cried quite a bit hearing about that. And the notes I even jotted down was the interview with the guy who hit Alex was the most infuriating, because you're watching him deny it, that he didn't do it. And then when he was told he did it, he was really indifferent. And then somebody just said, hey, I can give you a ride home. And then we found out later that maybe he'll need to do traffic school. But and I could be completely wrong, but I believe I was told later that I think he just left the country. And so I don't know. How did you, do you have any thoughts around the, that footage or?
This was the police body cam footage.
Yeah. Right. Okay, I was going to say clarified dash cam.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because yeah,
body cam.
Yeah.
Yeah. Body cam.
Yeah. It was super hard to watch.
So we were given this footage after the police had obviously been there and gave it to us.
And so we were just, so we didn't see anything with the accident. We barely see the car in the background because it was way, you know, it was far off, but it was just watching the police walk around and interview the driver of the other car. And it was super difficult to watch and to listen to, and to listen to him deny that he did it. And then one of the officers just kind of said, sir, we have 5 witnesses that watched it happen. Are you sure? You know? And then he's like, well, I didn't see that it was red, you know, and it was just like infuriating because, you know, I'm watching it at Alex's house while she's laying in bed, you know, recovering. And, and it was just, it brought it, I think it had been like a month or two probably since the accident. And so to have it all come back like that, would not recommend.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, like, and honestly, you didn't want to listen, or you didn't want to listen to it or watch it.
I couldn't.
And Alex.
Absolutely. It was just you and Mitch.
Yeah, Mitch did. And Mitch told me that it was really hard. Yeah. But there was a part of me that almost felt like I owed it to, like, the situation or something to bear witness of it, you know? And so, but it was, would not recommend.
Yeah. Well, so not that anyone will ever know that they're going to be in that position, but I appreciate you even saying that. It's weird. So when you talked about the alarm and then, you know, kind of going, oh, I so like the way you said that. There's a thing in psychology called a relational frame where you start to put two things together.
Mm-hmm.
And just when Wendy's talking about watching the footage, it made me think about the Mini Cooper, and it was a convertible. And do you remember what you said today when we were leaving lunch? It's a beautiful, gorgeous day.
Oh, I said it'd be a beautiful day to ride in a convertible.
Yeah. And immediately, did we all think the same thing?
Mitch said it.
Oh, I mean, I thought it too. Yeah. Just,
what did Mitch say?
Well, could have been if you didn't wreck ours.
And honestly, that's the stuff where I think it's so funny. Yeah, it is like when people do make some of those. Well, okay, we were playing Mario Kart last night with Mackie, and you said something about like car wreck or something, or
Mackie said like, oh, a car hit me, like that, oh. Like that hurt. I'm like, you what? I'm like, you go to
Mario Kart? So, and I appreciate when people can laugh like that, yeah, or you know, or if
or I, when people say the classic phrase of, oh, it feels like I got hit by a truck. Oh. I'm like, oh, no, it doesn't. No, it does not. We've
said that a few times, like, not purposely.
Because people just say that,
and,
yeah.
And you will be like, really?
Yeah.
Like, to us, like, jokingly, yeah. And that's always.
Well, and I think back to Mario Kart, I think one of the times in my life, I think I beat you. Then you're like, does that feel good, Dad?
Yeah. You're proud of that?
Yeah. Yes, I'm sitting here.
Yeah.
In my wheelchair.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm like, take that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. I mean, I'm curious if you just have some thoughts from your journal. I mean, you brought that and
yeah,
you journal every day.
I wish. I've journaled like 5 times throughout the last year. I bought this journal. I was like, this might not be big enough. Oh. I maybe took not even a quarter of it. But no, I was just flipping through this because I had just written down some like random memories because I didn't want to forget.
Let's hear them.
And then I also, a few months ago, had kind of just written down everything that I remember, like kind of the hard stuff, which is hard to read, but I also just wanted to have it. And I'll go through some of it.
Yeah,
I don't know
do
like what I'll keep or not, but.
Okay. You not even, she means editing the podcast, not what, yeah, I might get rid of some of the stuff out of my journal.
I might burn these pages.
Right, yeah.
Well, these are a few just random memories, not necessarily sad. I don't remember the first week much.
Oh, can I just, before you even go past that, that's one of the questions I get asked the most.
Of what?
Of the, just, okay, boy, you know, when it, first I'm typically told, when it comes back, she's going to really feel this and this and this. And then that you're going to remember
if I get the memory back.
Well, it's funny because a lot of people are saying, oh, it's coming back.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. Yeah. Or I've heard that. All of a sudden, like, maybe I'll hear an accident and it will bring back, like, the sounds of mine or
but
whatever.
You haven't had any of those.
I haven't had any of that. So, this one's pretty vulnerable, maybe. Okay. I don't know if that's the right word. But I remember this, like, literally a couple months ago, I was talking to Mitch. And he made some comment of, like, well, I wiped your butt for you. So, you know what I mean? Like, and I was like, no, you didn't. I was like, no, you did not. And he's like, are you serious? He's like, your mom and I literally had to wipe your butt. Like when you went to the bathroom, I do not remember you guys having to do that for me.
That might be the brain protecting
I'm
you.
So I don't remember.
Me too.
That,
I really
Alex.
Am grateful. Cause that is embarrassing.
And we should say that was in the hospital. Like when you were home, we never did when you were home. But when you were in the hospital,
like the first couple of days, cause I could not lift or move. So you guys would like, roll me over, have to
go to bedpan.
Like that is, and I don't remember that, which
I'm
is good.
So glad you know.
And for the record, mom has told me that she'll never wipe mine, even if I break both my arms.
I have said that.
Yeah.
You
so
will.
You feel special.
You
I don't think
she
would.
Will.
We will invest in a really nice bidet.
That he'll click with what?
Good point.
I'll turn the bidet on.
Okay.
Oh.
I'll turn the bidet on.
Down.
Hey, there you go.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay.
Compromise.
So, okay, I'll just kind of read through this. I don't know which of it is interesting or not, but just the amount of IVs I had all over my hands and arms, and I hate IVs. I still have, like, kind of faint scars because of how many times I was pricked. I was moved to rehab, a different hospital, and I specifically remember that car ride was so traumatizing because they, like, they just... I'm alone. Like, you and Mitch had to go separately.
We're deep in the heart of COVID at that point,
too. So I was wheeled into the back of a van in a stretcher. They just, like, hook the stretcher up to the wall of the van, shut the door, and just drive. And so I can see on the freeway all the cars, like, behind us. And it was the first time I had been alive. Or not alive. The first time I had been...
Outpost.
I mean, like, the first time in a car, other than the ambulance ride.
Yeah.
You know? And so that was so hard because it was seriously, like, PTSD. Like, oh, my gosh.
Oh,
my gosh,
oh my
gosh.
I see. I
and
see.
And I was alone in the back of a car.
Okay.
With a strange guy driving.
Yes.
That you don't even
know.
Man.
Yeah.
So I just remember that being terrifying. I remember.
Can I also say that guy must have been driving so fast because Mitch and I, we left at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy, when we got to the rehab center, they already had you almost into your room.
By the time
so,
you got there. Yeah. It was fast.
And Alex was upset when we got there. And I remember her saying like how traumatizing it was. And I thought, Well, probably didn't help that that guy was Hawaiian yeah. because Mitch isn't a slow driver.
Scary. Oh, yeah. yeah.
And
Mitch
is
basically a race car driver.
We got there wow. well after her yeah. driver got there. But anyway,
yeah.
beside the point.
So, yeah, just other small memories. I probably only ate at the most. Uh-huh. Like 400 or 500 calories a day, if that. I remember my meals consisting of a bite or two of oatmeal in the morning, maybe a couple of drinks of those Ensure shakes to help you up protein. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then that and soup, maybe a couple bites of soup. And that was like for 2 weeks straight. I and even at home for the next couple of months, I did not have an appetite. And so that was weird. And then.
Well, and you lost. A lot
so much weight.
And I don't know if this is comfortable for you or not, but you were in, honest to goodness, as I read in the intro, you were in phenomenal shape, like best shape of your life when that happened.
Yeah, that just added to the yeah. disappointment of it all. And I was going to the gym when the accident happened. So that's
right on your way to
the gym. Yeah, so that's, so maybe I should never go to the gym again.
Oh, no. That's the lesson here.
Yeah. Did we talk in the first one about the poo-poo cocktail?
Oh, I don't know. I forgot about that.
Because I drank it with you.
Oh, gosh. That was so
yeah, bad. So that was...
Thank goodness that nurse was...
Honestly, was I had some subpar nurses and some amazing nurses. And one, I was... So when you're taking
yeah.
opioids, you get very, very backed up, along with my whole pelvis being screwed yeah. up. Like, I couldn't go to the bathroom and... I really, it was awful because on top of all the other pain I had to also not be able to relieve myself, it yeah. was very uncomfortable. And there was a nurse that came in one time and just said, I'm going to make you this drink. I don't think she called it the poo-poo cocktail. I think you made up that name, right?
I think so.
And it, okay, so it was
prune juice, Miralax, I think.
Miralax,
butter,
and sugar.
Yeah.
And then you would heat it all up.
You would
up.
Warm it up so the butter would melt into the prune juice. And then it was like gritty from the sugar and the Miralax.
And she would put ice in it.
And so ice.
The butter would because that.
Oh, yeah.
She said it. Most people said it goes down better cold.
Yes.
But then the butter would like.
It just does not go down good.
Congeal onto the ice.
Right.
And, oh, yeah.
It was honestly, it was disgusting.
Yeah.
But it helped me mm-hmm. a few times. Mm-hmm. And then. Also helped you.
Well, I did it just to support you. I remember it was when you moved out of the hospital and you were going to take it. And I said, Al, I'll take it with you. And I pooped 10 times in the next 3 days.
Disgusting. Seriously.
It was crazy.
That's seriously disgusting.
No, thank you. But so, that was support, though.
Yeah.
Literally 10 times. I'm not, I wasn't like 10 times. 10 times.
You kept track?
In 3 days.
That's
I did keep track.
It's not that different for you.
Okay.
Anyways. So, yes, had to drink that, which was fun. I had to practice just the funniest things you don't think of. Like, so my OT would come in and...
Occupational therapist.
And would teach me how to put on my socks because I couldn't move my legs. They would teach me how to lift my body, my upper body out of bed. Like, I would have to turn without hurting my broken ribs, prop myself up with my broken elbow... move my body. Oh, I broke my back too. So I had a broken lower back.
Gosh, yeah.
And then basically find a way to just get my upper body up. And then either my mom or the nurse would pick up my legs and swing them over the bed. And then I would use my walker to get up, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then I would have to scoot my way to the bathroom, which took like 10 minutes just to get from my bed to the bathroom. And then it's like I needed help sitting on the toilet, needed help wiping. And this was, by the way, after I graduated from the bedpan and the commode. Like, this was a big deal that I could even go to a bathroom instead of peeing in my bed in a bedpan, you know? So it was just the weird things that you don't think about. Like, they were teaching me the best ways to brush your teeth while leaning on your walker and the best way to... put your hair in a ponytail when you can't lift your arms above your, you know what I mean? Like, just like the weird things like that. And I had to practice getting into a bathtub that they had there, not even to take a bath, but just to say, okay, when you get home, this is how you're going to set up your shower bench. This is how you're going to get into your bath. This is how you're going to, you know, wash your body and avoid the scars and not, you know what I mean? Just
all the things we had to like buy and order.
Oh my gosh. So much stuff. Ready
for yes. They wouldn't let you come home.
Right.
So all
we had things every we had tool, every.
Do you still have that sweet padded toilet seat or did you take that?
No, I've graduated from that. I should probably still use it. Sitting still hurts a little bit.
That was nice.
That was nice.
Okay.
But yeah, so little things like, you know, putting my socks on and getting dressed and even that I really couldn't, like they would help me try to do that, but I just like my mom would help me or Mitch would help me because I literally could not even put my socks on. And looking back at that, it's so weird.
That was, I don't know why that was a super, I remember that vividly.
Yes.
And I remember having to like walk around the corner because I just started bawling.
Yeah.
Because watching you have to use like
a little tool.
The little tool to put your sock on. Yeah, and I just like, remember oh thinking gosh. And the OT, like bless their hearts, they won't help you. Like
yeah, because they want you to really they want understand. You to do it.
So they will sit there. If it takes you 10 minutes to put your sock on,
they'll sit there.
They will sit there for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And again, saying that because that's their job.
That's their job.
Of course.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
Those doggone OTs.
No, that's what I mean. Like, bless their hearts. I they're agree. So patient. But I'm sitting there and I just remember thinking, I'm just going to put her sock on.
Right. Like come on.
I don't want her to sit there and struggle. She's struggling enough to like live.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to sit there and watch her struggle for 10 minutes to put her sock on. Yeah. I will put her sock on. Right. And I know they're teaching her and that, but it was, I just had to walk out of the room because I was like, this is awful. Torture. Like she can't put her socks on.
Like there's life
on,
lessons there we'll have to describe or just explore someday. Right. Cause I'm with you. Can you just.
Right.
Like, can we see just, what she's going through?
Yeah. Yeah. But then at the same time, I understand that that's their job and absolutely. I need to, you know what I mean? It's helpful and other things just like, you know, one of my PT lesson or not lessons, but my hour of PT for the day was, okay, we're going to wheel you downstairs and you're going to practice getting in your car, getting in and out of your car.
They
and
had to teach us how.
So hard for me to get into a car, a low car. That was so hard.
But, you know, bless them, too, for doing that, because I'm so grateful. Like, obviously, they've done this before. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But they sent us home with so much knowledge.
Yes.
Like, had we not done that.
Oh, we would have been in
Mitch
trouble.
And I would have had no idea how to. I would have been like, how in the world do we get her in the car? Yeah. You know? And they have all these little tips and tricks. Wow. And
Yeah. And then just other things I have, sneezing and coughing were insanely painful because my ribs and my pelvis and everything. I have finally took a shower by myself. Took 4 months until I was able to shower by myself.
My gosh.
So I remember the first shower was week 2 in rehab and the OT came in and it was time for my first shower. And I remember that was so hard because I'm just naked in front of 5 people who are trying to help me shower. I'm just, you know, it's like at a, such a low place, you're so uncomfortable. I'm in so much pain and it's like, I'm just trying to shower. Like I can't even shower, you know what I mean? Without 5 people helping me. And so that, I remember that was difficult. And then coming home for, the first 4 months or whatever, like my mom would, or Mitch would help me take my clothes off, get into the shower, sit on the bench. My mom would have to wash my hair because I couldn't keep my hands above my head for too long. And it was just too much physically.
Shaving your legs.
Shaving my legs. Like it was a huge task. And so that was a big moment to finally do that by myself. And the warm water would hurt, like my broken bones
weird
stuff.
Couldn't hit your back.
Yeah,
remember
because
that?
My sacrum would
But you had to sit with your back to
exactly.
the shower.
Oh, yeah, gosh, just weird things. And then let's see. Mitch had to give me a shot in my stomach every morning for the first month or so. That.
Blood clots or something.
To help
with
prevent blood clots. And I hate needles. So that was just torture. I'm like,
and
here
bless
we
Mitch,
go.
Mitch
was so good.
I was like, I don't think I can do this. And Mitch was like, psh, I got it. No problem.
Yeah. Yeah. We watched a lot of March Madness, Shark Tank.
I think about that. It's my go-to.
Yep. That's a good one still. Let's see. Oh, I just remember all of the... Just the stares I would get when I was out in public with my cane.
Oh.
That was just another lesson. I'm like, I hope I never do that. I hope I never make it obvious or, you know what I mean? It's like, they're already going through something if they're using any of that. And it's like, just, I just remember people, there were a few people that would not even break eye contact with me and just look me up and down, whisper right in front of me. And it's okay.
I remember hearing people pass by and you would hear, because to be fair,
and I get it.
You're young.
I get it. Yes.
You know, but you're walking with the cane, or even when you were in your wheelchair.
Yeah.
I remember people would pass by and be like, oh, did you see that girl?
Yeah.
What do you think happened? Yeah. I wonder what happened to
and
her.
And it's like, I get the curiosity, but like, maybe wait a minute.
Because yeah. I think it was just crushing just for hurt. You to be yeah, like, oh hard. My gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's like, I'm man, a I human being. Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And then I don't know if you remember this, but apparently during my, this, I don't remember this either, by the way, Mitch told me this, but after my first surgery, my eye was slightly open. So my eye got a laceration.
I do remember that because we were
awful.
Yeah.
Like we were worried about
my sight or something. Yeah. Like I got a cut in my eye because it was open for too long. That. And yeah. you would have to rub like a lubricant on my eyeball for days.
Oh.
Yeah.
So that was just another annoying thing. About yeah. that. I thought that was.
And I do remember feeling so bad because you had so much going on.
I know. I was like, of course.
And you were
I can't
like,
see.
My eye, like my eye.
Okay. And then this is the more, I keep wanting to say vulnerable. I don't know if that's the right word, but I just kind of wrote this.
Your handwriting in your journal is impeccable.
Oh.
It's crazy.
These are tear.
Oh my gosh. There really are tears.
That's so sad. Oh.
It was really sad. I feel like I was maybe trying to be, like, too poetic when I wrote this, but I'm just going to read it anyways. Okay, hold on. Let me see where this is. This was in August. So I said, it's been 6 months since my accident. I've had a lot on my mind. The reason I wrote this down was because I felt myself downplaying everything that happened. And I don't know why I do that. But as time went on, I'd be like, oh, it was just a little car accident. Or it was, you know what I mean? Because when you're kind of through the thick of it, I would just kind of dismiss what actually happened. And I wanted to write down a lot of the hard parts,
yeah.
not because I wanted to relive those yeah. and remember those, but I also do want
it's part of what your journey is.
Right. Been. And I want to like justify what I went through so I can remember that. So I can almost be like, okay, this was challenging and look how far I've come for myself mostly, but just so I could remember that instead of downplaying it, because then it almost makes, it just kind of takes away everything that I learned and went through when I'm constantly like,
yeah, I like
down.
To say, yeah, don't invalidate yourself. I think we do that so often just as people.
Right. So, okay. I said, waking up in a hospital bed as nurses were basically pulling my top half from my bottom half while trying to move me, all while not knowing what happened to me, was horrible. Getting in a horrible accident after finally being placed in the perfect externship was unfair. Didn't think I'd cry.
I know,
this
me
episode
too.
Of date. Oh. Okay. Only being able to have 2 visitors per day from 10 to 6 and then being, left alone to worry and be with my pain in solitude was extremely lonely. Being forced out of my hospital bed after surgery to stand up with physical therapists was excruciating. Getting a shot in my stomach every day for over a month was painful. Needing help to go to the bathroom and wipe was extremely embarrassing. Not having an appetite and losing 15 pounds in 2 weeks was disheartening. Having a tube coming out of my lung and through my ribs was disturbing. Seeing my body covered with blood, cuts, scrapes, bruises, and IV lines was scary. My first time in a car after that accident to get transported from trauma to a rehab hospital was terrifying. Only sleeping 2 hours a night because of discomfort and then being woken up at 7 a.m. for 3 hours of PT was challenging. Using my walker with a broken elbow and only one good leg was draining. Seeing my non-existent strength in my core and legs during the simple PT exercises was alarming. Using a wheelchair because one short hallway was too much for my body was upsetting. Spending Valentine's Day in the hospital without my husband was not fun. Being woken up every 2 to 4 hours at night for my meds was frustrating. Having nurses help me out of bed to use the commode and watching them take the bucket out to clean it afterwards was humiliating. Having my first shower as I sat naked on a bench in front of 3 other people while they cleaned me was awkward. Knowing that if I wanted to use the bathroom, I would need help lifting my legs off the bed, as well as needing 5 minutes to get there with my walker, and needing help to lower myself on the toilet was infuriating. Being discharged and getting in a car to come home was scary. Feeling trapped in my own room because I was too weak to do anything else was frustrating. Having my pain and feelings dismissed by those around me was heartbreaking. Watching my friends all graduate when I should have was torture. Feeling like I was a burden. Feeling like I was a burden on my mom and Mitch was upsetting. Needing help getting in or out of my own bed was difficult. Having 24/7 pain for the first 4 months is something I would never wish upon anyone. Needing help washing my hair and body, putting lotion on and brushing my hair was hard. Lying awake all night without sleep was lonely. Feeling so angry at what happened to me was consuming and challenging. Going to multiple physical therapy and doctor appointments weekly was tiring. Having swollen areas of my body and losing my curves was disheartening and made it feel like I was not beautiful. Not feeling grateful that I was alive and that things weren't worse made me feel guilty. I could go on and on, but overall it has been overwhelmingly challenging and lonely, and can still feel that way. Things are getting so much better, but I don't want to forget the things that I experienced because I'm so proud of myself. It has been so hard, but I'm coming out of it stronger and wiser than before, and for that I'm grateful.
Man.
That's hard. I don't know.
It shows you how it's just close to the surface. Okay.
It's just...
all the emotions can still be.
Right. And it's hard because I feel like a lot of that stuff is just things that, unless you were right there with me, you just wouldn't know that I was feeling or going through. And I don't even know. I don't even know why I'm sharing that. But I think it's just eye-opening and kind of goes back to the message of you just don't know what people are going through and what they still are feeling or experiencing. And I think that was just such a great lesson for me.
Do you know, that's so heartbreaking to hear you read that because, like, I was here.
Yeah.
You were so positive all the time.
Yeah.
And it just breaks my heart to hear some of the way that you describe things. And it's almost like eye-opening right now to me to be like, I didn't, like, I knew it was hard, right?
Right.
But, like, to hear you describe it that way, it's just like, it just breaks my heart that for everything that you went through and continue to go through, you know, because of that, because you never, you didn't complain. You didn't, you know,
I knew
you were down, but that was to be expected. Right. But you didn't complain. That's the first time I've heard you express a lot of those feelings. And I think that is probably very, I just think of other people who have gone through similar things have probably felt that way.
Yeah.
And on the outside, being on the outside, you just, we don't know that. You don't know that. You know, others don't know, you know, what you're going through. And even to be here and to be with you 24 hours a day, I didn't know a lot of that, you know.
That's interesting.
Okay, Alex, first of all, I think it's important to note that we don't know what will sound like if you hear mauling in the background or licking or Alex's amazing one-year-old golden retriever. Charlie is here providing comic relief, but also woke up from her nap while you were relaying those heartfelt notes.
Yep. She's really keeping it positive.
That's right.
She's licking
your shoe right now, which is really nice. I think another question, and then maybe we can wrap things up, but one of the things I get asked often too is, you know, what's this? Will you be able to have kids? As I ask it, even it's even been said of, can you believe that somebody is worried about her having kids versus the, like, maybe it's the people that are saying, hey, at least she's alive. And what are your thoughts on all that? And what do you know? And is it anybody's business?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying.
I totally get it. I get the curiosity, and that's, you assume that when someone's, well, I would assume that if someone had extensive pelvic injuries, that could definitely be affected. So I completely understand the curiosity from that. And it's still unknown exactly on how, like, birth and giving birth will be. But as far as what I've been told is that I should be able to have kids. It's just how I will deliver them is the question, because there's a bolt going through very close to my pubic symphysis, which there's just a lot of unknown, I guess, of how my pelvis will move when I need to give birth. So it's pretty potential that there would be a C-section or things like that. And I also don't know if that will just be more painful since I have, you know, issues back there. It's like if just my body moving and changing with the baby, like I'm sure that that could cause a lot of issues. So they've definitely made note to have me see a specialist when I'm considering that, just to make sure we look at everything. But no, I get the curiosity, and thankfully I don't mind talking about that, because thankfully it is not anything that we're super concerned about right now. As in, it's not like a, you know, it's not like a scary answer, because it should be possible somehow, which is good.
As we kind of wrap things up, and I think you've covered everything, but if people have questions, I would love for them to send them to us, and we can get on and do another one in a little while too.
I love that.
Right.
I just also want to take the time to just thank all the people who have just done literally anything, whether it's prayers or good vibes or keeping their curiosity and asking my parents about me or checking in on social media, sending me a message. And especially when we had our GoFundMe up, just the donations we got were just truly mind blowing. And I seriously cannot express my gratitude enough for everyone that contributed to that. And I think I feel like I need to apologize for not expressing that gratitude sooner. That is just such a difficult thing to ask for someone to help in that way. And at the time, it really just felt like survival mode to get through those months. And it was just such a weird feeling. I remember after putting the GoFundMe up, I was bawling for hours after, because it felt so wrong and vulnerable to be asking people for that sort of help. And it just seriously means the world, like for the people who shared it and donated. And I cannot thank everyone enough and express how truly helpful that has been for Mitch and I and our family, and just has really helped us get through this time. And the support seriously was just, it was insane. And I wish there was a way I could express that gratitude better, but I'm just so grateful. And I felt like I definitely should address that on this, just because of how many just wonderful supporters and followers there have been throughout this whole thing.
It was phenomenal. And it did just, it was really touching, because when you got deeper into that world of GoFundMe, you would see people that would have a lot of things that they were dealing with, and there wouldn't necessarily be the support. And then I would find myself feeling bad for those people.
Right.
And to know that even the people that were getting some support like yourself felt bad about that. And it just shows you what a tough spot it's in. But how grateful though we all were for the people that just anything. And it wasn't even anything. Just financially. Yeah. It was like spreading the word or the, like you say, the prayers or any of that was amazing.
It really was. And I'm just super grateful. And it is really crazy to think that was over a year ago, and just to see how far I've come and just how changed I am because of it, both physically and mentally, and just how it's such a new world of dealing with, you know, chronic pain and the mental struggles from it. And it's opened my eyes to just so many things, like what other people are going through. And it still is hard for me to even talk about it, because I default to the fact that I know people out there have it worse. And so it feels weird to dive into my story when I know it can be worse. But I obviously am grateful for everything it's taught me, as difficult as it has been and still is.
Yeah.
But I do think there have just been so many valuable lessons and things to learn from it. So grateful to be here.
Grateful that you are willing to share, and that we have a platform to kind of get the message out. Because I know that, again, we never wish that any of this would have happened.
Right.
But I know personally, I know from people that I work with in my office, from the messages that we receive, that there have been a lot of things that people have been able to self-reflect and make some change in their lives. So
yeah,
I'm grateful that you're willing to be this open. And thank you to our off the mic guest, Wendy, for all that you've done. This counts as you being on the podcast again.
Second time, or more?
I think she's been three, maybe. You were in the background. No, you were in COVID Kids. Oh, and then the first one of these episodes. So three times that I've had you on here.
Nice.
One of these times, it's going to be one-on-one, an in-depth interview. Okay. Alex, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time.
Okay.
On the virtual couch. Okay.
Compressed emotions flying past, our heads and out the other end. The pressures of the daily grind, it's wonderful. Elastic waste and rubber ghost, I'm floating past the midnight hour. They push aside the things that matter most. It's wonderful.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.